Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2800. Okay, all right. 2800. Tonight, we have a special guest. Her name is Nancy V. Brown, and she's from Atlanta, Georgia, and she is a survivor, an advocate, and a coach, and she's also going to be volunteering, from what it says here, with NASCA, okay? We can always use that. Yes, we can. Now, I have a 617 area code here. First of all, I want to see if this is she. Hold on a second.
Yeah, this is I.
Hi, how are you doing? Fine.
Hi, I'm good. Good evening. Thank you for having me tonight.
Well, thank you so much. We're so happy you're here. Now, before we get started with the show, I'm not going to read the bio because it's extensive, and, you know, I like for people to tell things in their own voice, okay? So, but I will coach you as we go along. All right, let me get the NASCA statement out of the way. Our mission here is we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways, educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, present the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem, and it does affect everyone, okay? Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, I say it that way, prevention, intervention, and recovery for a reason.
For a reason.
A lot of people get, yeah, you bet. Because, you know, if we have more prevention, if people were more educated, if society was more educated, and in our neighborhoods, okay, our communities, about even just the, and I don't mean just the, but what child abuse looks like, okay, what does it look like? And I'm handing out all different kinds of paperwork in the last couple of weeks, my daughter also. And it has the logo NASCA on there, NASCA, and it gives our also our website. Because the reason why I'm doing this, Nancy, is we want people to see the signs of child abuse, and we're hoping to educate the public even more and make them more aware. So we have our things that we do, and, of course, handing out cards. I wish people would do that. Just go to the website. That's NASCA, NASCA.org, NASCA. .org. And if you scroll down a little bit, you see all different red lines, and these red lines have different things in them. All the way over to the left, it's programs, okay? And that's what you call in, and you can find out what the programs are. Actually, all you have to do is click on. And I live in New Jersey right now, and if I wanted help on the outside of NASCA or any other organization, I could click on. And you'd be surprised that even in your own towns, everything is alphabetical. You look for New Jersey, you click on, and I'm in Oxford, so I would look for Oxford. Don't think there'd be too much in Oxford. I have 2,000 people in my town, if that. I don't think so. but there would be a town very close by, very close, that would have, a program that you can call. And these people, they go there and they congregate and they talk over their problems and so forth, and it's a very good thing to do. So that's just one thing. We have so many things. We have the contact page. We have that. And on the night owl, I'm at the top of the contact page. You call me 2 o'clock in the morning. I've got many, many calls. I have to get back to 3 tonight after the show. And that's not even in the a.m. yet. But anyway, so that's enough said about that. Look over our website. Get to know it. I'm proud of our website. I use it for presentations. I use it for all different kinds of things. I use it for giving out information, like I said. And but always ask first, okay, if you make copies to put up on a bulletin board in the store, wherever, for permission. Always ask permission first. Okay, enough of that. So tonight we have Nancy Brown. And again, she is from Atlanta, Georgia, and she is a child abuse survivor, an advocate, and a coach. And Nancy, also, I think you have your own business, but I don't want to get into that. That we do at the end. But what we do in the beginning is that you start off by telling your story, okay? And in chronological order, like if you were 5 years old, I'm just saying, when you started to get abused or you remember the abuse, you start there. And I'll stop you from time to time, you know, maybe to ask you a question or whatever, or make a comment. And we continue on until the end of the story. And then after that, you tell us what you're doing today. Because it's very important, Nancy, for people to know that there is life after abuse. There absolutely is. And if you get the help that you need, right, while you're growing up, some point in your life, and a lot of times it's, people don't wait until they're after 30 a lot of times. I was 30 when I went for help, but some people don't wait until they're around 40 or 50, for God's sake. Better, the sooner the better. But you start living your life then. You go on the healing journey. And this is so, so important. Okay. Now, why don't you start by telling us your story? Go ahead.
Yes. So it's interesting.
Wait a minute, honey, wait a minute. I want to make you a little louder. I want to make you a little louder. Hold on. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, so the abuse actually did start around age 5. it used to take place at my paternal side of the family side of the house, of the family. But we would just, you know, be spending time together, and that person was very funny to me, was always the star of the show, just, you know, the nicest one out of everyone, always very nice. And so, you know, I built, there was love, there was concern, there was trust between this family member.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just felt like, you know, safe. And he started to sneak out into the bathroom when nobody was paying attention and start to fondle me, bend me over, touch me. It was very inappropriate. But I was, like, very confused. Like, wait a minute, what just happened? It was like a switch, right? And it took me, I was just still in shock. And then he would always tell me not to tell anybody, not to say anything. And I just was like, you know, okay, I have to respect him, I have to trust him. But then I avoided him as much as I could. Like I would sleep, like if I slept in the bed with 2 other family members, small young ones like myself, I would try to sleep on against the wall. You know, I would try to like get away from the person. And so he would go over them and get me. He would find me. He would go over those people, and he would get me and take me in the bathroom and do those types of things to me. The fondling, bending me over, you know, and then tell me not to tell anyone. Then I guess he got a little more comfortable. Some of the abuse took place during the daytime. in the house. He would masturbate in the shower and have me to watch. And, you know, I was like, oh, my God. What? First of all, I didn't know what that was when I saw that stuff come out of there. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what that was. I was just like, wait a minute. This is, I mean, I think this is very inappropriate. At this point, I'm beyond, you know. And so that was about it. I just, it was really bothering me. And I found an opportunity to one day when I was with my mom to talk to her about it. You know, we were in the house. Everything was very peaceful. I felt safe. I mean, you know when it's the right time. And I just was like, did I say a secret? Because I was testing her spirit, her temperament. And then she was like, yeah, you can tell me a secret. And I was like, you know, I said, this person touches me. And then she was just like, what's he say? So then I just started to tell. I said, well, you know, he touched me like this. And then that's all I got out because my mom got so angry. She started screaming and yelling. She was like, calling everybody. I was like, I should have never said anything to her. Oh, my God. You know, she's like making phone calls. She's like coordinating a meeting, family meeting. She was like, I was like, oh, my God, I should never said anything. So I was just like, I had shame, you know, that I was embarrassed. There was just a lot of different emotions going on. And I felt, you know, guilty for telling. There was a lot of different emotions going on. Then my mom set up a meeting, and I used to love balloons so much. I was, like, balloon addicted. And so if I saw a balloon somewhere, I would start crying for the balloon. Like, it was like that. And I don't know why I had a balloon in my hand, but I had a white balloon in my hand, and I felt protected. I felt, you know, like the balloon was helping me with whatever, my anxiety, my nerves, whatever. And so I was sitting on my mom's lap, and I had the balloon in my hand, and I put it up to my face to hide behind the balloon. So I felt even more safe, like, oh, they, you know, he can't see me. I'm behind the balloon. And my mom had me on her lap, and then she said a few things. She said, I want you to just repeat what you told me. And then everybody was quiet. You hear a pin drop. And then I was like, he touches me. And then my mom, like, snatched the balloon out of my hand and threw it at his face. And she was like, you shouldn't be hiding your face. He needs to hide his face. And I was just like, ooh. And then she just grabbed me and we left. And then that was it. And I didn't see that person for a few years. Family was highly upset with me from my paternal side. They were upset. They were confused. They were in shock. It was a lot of different emotions. Everybody was like, you know, like I said, you know, the person is very personable, very, you know, the life of the party. People are going to definitely want to protect that person. Mm-hmm. Well, especially if they've had good encounters with the person. It doesn't even go with what we know of this person. But it's like you don't know the person because the abuse would happen when he was under substance abuse, like when he was under whatever, drugs, alcohol. That's when that abuse would take place. So as a person, I've never seen that conduct out of that person, just regular. But with those things involved, that person turned into somebody else. It was like another spirit came out. So,
well, you know, let me say something there, because this, you know, first of all, a lot of people are listening, okay? So, first of all, you know, so often the abuse does happen in the family. That's number one. so many, many, many times more, actually, in the family, okay, very high up there. It's not the guy down the street, okay? It happens in the family. And that's number one. And then number two, if the person is very charismatic, okay, has the type of way about him where he's charming, okay? He's charming. And he's nice to be around. He's funny. Maybe he's cute on top of it all, okay? All these things, you know, all these things. And he knows how to, you know, get in with the people, okay? Mess around with them, jive around with them, and all that other stuff, all right? And they're just, it's just like they don't want to believe that someone like this, okay, could be doing something like that to you or any other little girl or boy, all right? They don't want to believe it. And that's what happens so often, so many times with we the children, okay? They don't want to, either they don't care or they don't want to believe it, and that's a shame. And you must have felt very, very alone, okay? Because if people aren't going to believe you, if people aren't going to, if they're not going to believe when you've opened up, first of all, it takes guts to do that, all right? And you did it well before the age of 30. I mean, I tried with my mother, with my brother, okay, long before 30, and I got nowhere. But, you know, usually it's for the open, for the people. It's 30 or above. And here you had, at a tender age, you know, it must have been frightening for you to tell your mother these things. And then for all this other stuff to happen. So I just want to say I feel very sorry for you for that. Because, quite frankly, I know what it's like not to be believed or, in my case, not to care. All right, go ahead.
So I found myself before I saw my mom, there were times that I would be with some of these family members, the younger ones, like my age group, specifically one would be with me, and she was like, I was two and a half, three, and sometimes in front of me and her. The way to protect her, like, it got to a point where it was just getting out of control, more comfortable, and and I guess if you're not telling, then you're like, great, she's not even telling. I don't know what the mindset was, but I do know that that person also went through abuse from a family member, male, in his family, in the family, and so this was something that, you know, it becomes a cycle. You know, you go through abuse, and then you become an abuser, or you go through certain traumas, and then you repeat them. And I think that that was just something that he was already fighting within himself, and maybe he didn't get out, care he didn't get help for. And that, you know, you start self-medicating, coping with, you know, it makes you happy. You could, you feel like this, you feel like that, but then your guards are down and other things could come out that you don't mean, that you don't, that that's not your heart, but because of those substances, they can take the worst out of you. And I think that that's what I was seeing, the worst of that person, where nobody else saw that deep like I got to see in those eyes.
Right. Well, yeah. See, that happens so often. Many times, not all the time, but many times the abuser has been abused themselves, you know. And in families, there can be several abusers that, you know, abuse children in the family. And then, of course, they can have friends, excuse me, who are abusers. And it's just so rampant, you know. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about family or friends of family. It's just all over the place. it's an ugly thing. That's what it is. It's ugly. And I really believe that it's going to take we, the survivors. You know, we have this platform here, which I'm so thankful that Bill put together, because We've had so many people. I mean, this is scan number 2,800, okay, that have come on and told their stories. And it's sort of like a good feeling. I mean, I told it, never left. Ask him, he'll tell you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing of it is it's so good to have a place where you can speak, where, you know, the people that are listening, and then there are those that aren't NASCA members. Maybe they've never heard it before. I've handed out so many cards. Maybe there's people listening for the first time tonight. I don't know. But, you know, mm-hmm. the point is this, that there is a place for people to come to right here where you can tell the story, your story. And afterwards, you know what? You feel good that you told your story because you told that ugly secret. There is a saying that Bill comes up with from time to time, you're as sick as your secrets. I've noticed in here, and I'm going to ask first about schooling, because you were such a little girl and then you had to go into school. I was wondering what the secret that you tried to reveal, and you did, and no one listened to you and all this other stuff. Did you have trouble in school, like concentrating and things like that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I had trouble in school concentrating, and, you know, it affects your self-esteem. It's very tough. I grew up, I'm originally from Costa Rica, so I grew up in Costa Rica. So I was in school. So I was already dealing with, you know, a black girl, black Latina, in school. So, and I went to school with, I lived in a area where it was predominantly white Spanish. Mm-hmm. And so I already was dealing with a lot of other stuff, you know. So I was already fighting to have my self-esteem go up and be standing strong in the world. And then when I went to that, like, you know, it was a lot more. And then I felt more alone. But I always had, like, you know, a good deeper connection with my spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest with you, even when I'm alone, I still don't feel alone.
Yeah.
I have access to a stronger force. I have access to God, you know, and literally there's times when I feel alone and I'm like, oh, thank you, God, that I'm not alone. Thank you, God, that you're with me, right? Because if not, you know, if you really believed that you were alone, it would just be very horrible. But, yeah, I did have a hard time in school, you know, and I'm out in the eighth grade. You know, I was missing school. I didn't want to go to school. I was complaining that I didn't feel well. And I just didn't want to be there sometimes. And then when I did want to go back, I was so behind because, you know, if you miss school, that does affect you. And this is my adolescent years. I mean, right after the abuse and all that, I was still in school and I just kept going like nothing. I just kept going like nothing. This is like more the teenage years. Dealing with, you know, mean girls and dealing with other emotional silly stuff that you deal with school, middle school, high school age. That's serious because a lot of kids commit suicide dealing with some of these issues that these kids have to deal with, just regular issues of the world, right? School age. But then on top of that, having to try to figure out emotions that you're having, new emotions, your hormones are changing, there's things happening. So it was a lot.
Yeah, from most of us, for many of us, you know, I know that with myself, it's like kids can tell. You know, we feel different for one thing, okay? And we know what's happened to us. And, you know, kids, they go to school, and a lot of times we walk with our head held down, you know, because we feel less than, and because we were abused. And when people don't believe this, or they don't care that you were abused, and nothing happens, you know, to show you, you know, that the abuser is going to go to jail or he's going to whatever, then it just makes you feel even more alone. And you just feel like, well, I guess this is just the way it's going to be. Now, I was a fighter. So when I went into school, you know, kids, they'd pick up on things with me. And I ended up punching them in the nose. I didn't care. You know, and well, you bet. You're going to mess with me, I'm going to punch you in the nose, that's it. And that's the way I became very tough. See, sometimes kids are very inward or they're the opposite. Good grief, my phone never stops. But in fact, I'm going to hide it. I thought I shut it off and I didn't. Okay, there you go. So anyway, so the point is that you either become inward or you become aggressive. And I got to the point where I was so aggressive. Yeah. I got so aggressive the kids were afraid of me, and I didn't care. I think I even scared a couple of teachers. I'm serious. I think I did. Because and that wasn't the way to be. That's not how I wanted to be. Right. But you see... Right. If we go through life like this, where people don't, you know, listen to us, they don't hear our voices when we speak, or they don't care what we say when we do speak, this is what happens. You either become very bashful inward, or you become aggressive. And I see here that you had to go through some of that too. You went through kids were, making fun of you, hazing and bullying and some racism. And it says here that you dealt with depression and you did attempt suicide. So did I. Many, many kids do that. But I was 17 when I tried. I think you were probably younger. Yeah. How old were you?
I know I was actually in school, I remember. I think I probably was about 13 or 14, somewhere around there.
Yeah, so it's kind of picking up.
About that. And I remember I was just so tired. I was just feeling sick and tired. I didn't see things, get changing. I just was upset with what was going on around me at the time. At that time, my mom and her boyfriend and I were not getting along. My little brother, I think he was just born or he was about to be born or he was already born. But, seeing them as a family hugged up and then me not experiencing that, feeling like the reject, like the third wheel. Even though the baby was a part of them, I was like the fourth wheel, but in that sense, I felt like the outer, right? Like the outcast. I was going through hormonal changes, things. I was, dealing with a lot of other personal stuff. And I really just felt tired. I felt alone. I felt like, who did I talk to? You know what I mean? Either people are doing really well or people don't care or people, you know what I mean? Who could I talk to, like, seriously? Like, I needed, like, immediate. And I just felt so alone, and I just was tired, and I took a bottle of pills, and I took some of the pills, and I went to sleep. And I woke up later on, and I was not happy that I woke up, but it was like the longest, probably the best sleep. But I woke up, I was just like, man, maybe it wasn't my time, you know?
Right. And, it wasn't your time.
You know,
it wasn't
I guess it
your
wasn't
time.
My time, but I was sore, sick of it, and I just wanted to die so many times. But I think that was the only main time that I really was like, let me be a little proactive with this, you know, this is just too much. I mean, this cannot be life, right? Always. It couldn't be. So I was just exhausted.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you were in school, how did you deal with the bullying? I told you, I punched people in the nose. That's what works for me. I don't tell people to do that. I'm just telling you what I did. But
Well, me, I just didn't say anything. I would just stay quiet and keep it in, and they would just keep abusing me and being, you know, trying to embarrass me in front of the class when the teachers weren't paying attention. At one point, I mean, I've been in situations where the teachers would hear, and I'm just, like, flabbergasted. Like, how could you hear this and not say something to make them stop being abusive? Mm-hmm. Like, that is so abusive, you know what I mean? So condoning the abuse. That's what it is. And so...
I think teachers should be more involved with stuff like that. You know, a lot of times they see it. Well, it's just, I don't know why they're like that, but a lot of times they see it. And you know, they just turn and look the other way, you know, let him figure it out.
Yeah, it's just kid stuff. I don't get into that stupidness. No, it's serious. The suicide rate is so high, and it's higher for girls. Why?
Because
the mean girls bullying, teasing, hazing, you know, and doing all of this abusive behaviors.
Mm-hmm. It really is something that I'm going to see if I can't get someone on and talk about the bullying. You know, it's most of the time they want to be paid, and they charge high. That's why I haven't gotten them on. I go, okay. But it is important. Yeah. It's very important because, you know, we cover sexual, physical, mental, emotional, and neglect on our show.
Right.
And bullying, of course, would be with the emotional, I would think, and physical, too, because a lot of times, you know, you do get hit and stuff like that. And that can anything that is trauma affects a child, affects anyone.
Yeah.
Anything that's trauma, okay, it's traumatic. And so when you were going through all this stuff as a teenager, too, and at 14, you know, did you have any friends, first of all? Did you have any friends at all?
When I was going through the abusers, you're asking?
Well, any time during school. A lot of times kids did our
school, no. You know, I have like one person that I may connect with, and I kind of stick around that. But no, I had a lot of circles. So like there'll be one friend in this particular area, you know, like that. So. And what do I mean by that? Let me see. If I was with family, I would have like a favorite cousin, something like that, you know. If I was in school, then I might have one person. If I'm in the neighborhood, I may have one person like that. I'm not, I was not big on like big social friendship, open, you know, friendships like that. Not much.
Well, that's okay, though. Because you just, you know, named off like four different people, three or four different people. That's okay. That's better than a child who has no friends and no family. That's what I was sort of like trying to get at.
Right.
Because that makes it even harder.
Yeah. I moved to the United States. I was with my mom, with my aunt. And so, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends. I had my cousin. Her and I were, you know, growing up together and around that age group. So I didn't have a lot of friends.
That's all right. You had one here, one there, enough to keep you going, okay? I sort of like went through a period of time.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I went through a period of time where in my whole school, I only had one friend. She was older than me this particular time. She was 2 years older than me. But we were great friends. And I wouldn't tell her that I was being abused. I didn't tell. She didn't know that part of my life. Because I feared if I told her, she would tell my her mother, And then her mother would tell an uncle of mine, she was abused by many. So this is with my uncle this time. And he always said he'd kill me if I told. So I kept my mouth shut. So at least I had the friend, though, and we had a great time together. She just didn't know what was going on, you know, in the house that I was living in. So if you can have a friend here, a family member there, and maybe another friend in another part of the circle, whatever, you have someone. And yeah, and I'm thankful that you had that at least. So how did this affect you? Like, all right, so you're going through your teenage years. And you got to, what did you do after high school? Did you go to high school, or how did that work?
Yeah, so I didn't, I dropped that in the eighth grade. And that was it for my education, for school. I dropped that in the eighth grade. When I came to the United States, I was 10 years old. And when I came to the United States, I was about 10. I was about nine and a half-ish, around there. And when I went to school, the only thing I could say, I couldn't even say light. Like, I didn't know how to speak English at all. So that definitely was already a struggle for, I was already having a hard time in school because of the language barrier, having to learn to read in English, having to learn to speak in English, being teased about my accent, you know. Of course, you know, if I look different, whatever, I had a scar on my face, so the kids would call me Scar Kids, this and that. But I was not a big fan of school. Like, I was already kind of like, the kids were annoying, the girls always wanted to fight me. It's just some silliness.
It's
like, what? So it was just, and then coming from where I come from, you know, normally the women are very welcoming, they hug you, they kiss you, so it's just like, I was going into, like, a different culture. It was just a lot. So around the eighth grade, I was acting up. I was missing school. And then when I was returning, I was behind. So closer to, you know, the eighth grade, I just started to say I just wanted to be out. And I believe I was pregnant. I got pregnant with my daughter. And then I left school. Probably after that or right before it, either or. Can't remember right now, but, you know, I went back and then I got my GED. I went back. I'm in school right now. I'm constantly in school. I mean, I love school. I went to school, got I went to school for criminal justice, got my degree for that. Then I continued and I'm always in school. I'm always trying to learn. I love it now, but back then, at that time, I could see all the issues why I did not like school. I started to hate school. You know, the kids were mean, and it was just like, all right.
I hear that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's just that happens. Like, I walked out of my high school. I walked out. Because I was being bullied too much, and in those days we had something called the hoods. I don't know if you know what the hoods are.
What's that? Like the hoodlums?
They'd slick their hair back really tight against their head, and they wear black leather jackets. And there's even a movie they made. It's called West Side Story. And it's a wonderful movie. In fact, when I get off the show, I'm gonna look at that movie again. And those are the times that I was growing up in, and the hood boys wanted me. They wanted to take me out, and I was fighting with the hood girls. Finally, I said, "You know what? I'm getting out of here."
Right.
And I walked,
that's how they
and
were.
I got
the
out of there.
The girls didn't like me because the guys liked me, so the girls didn't like me.
That happens. That happens.
I was like, what is this?
I got my GED too. After that,
I was like, "I'm out of here. Y'all crazy."
Right.
I'm going.
That's exactly right. And I didn't even study. I just went and I took it and I passed. I knew I wasn't, you know, I knew that I wasn't stupid. I was just in trouble. And you see, when you don't have help at home, when you don't have anyone at home who's encouraging you, And I used to say, hey, look, I'm being bullied in school. Yeah, kids go through that. Well, you're not going through it. Yeah.
Right. It's torture. I mean, you cannot focus. It affects your spirit. It affects your mind. It makes you depressed. It gives you anxiety. I mean, it's horrible. You have anxiety knowing you have to go to school again tomorrow, knowing you have to see these girls or these people for the whole week, knowing you have to see them, you know, the next, you might have to do a project with them. I mean, it's torture.
It's very, very bad. And it's another one of the abuses. I mean, that's being abused. And you walked
that's
and I walked
abuse.
And we both got our GED and I went on from there and you went on from there. So, you know, so you got your schooling and I got mine. Wherever I was sent, I had to go to school.
Now,
I suffered from panic attacks, horrific panic attacks. So I would.
What are the signs?
Well, oh my God, your heart feels like it's going to jump out of your chest. You start to sweat. You start to shake. You want to run, but you can't run. You can't run anyway. It depends on where you are. I mean, if you're in school, right? I mean, all kinds of stuff. And it's just a very, it can become debilitating. Okay. It can. And I had panic disorder. It actually turned into that. So I would lean on alcohol to give me the courage that I needed to get through, you know, the day. And I started drinking when I was 13. And by the time I was 16, I was really heavy into alcohol, and I started hanging out myself. I started hanging out with kids that were, you know, very, very iffy, we'll put it that way. They all came from dysfunctional homes because, you know, what happens is we're like magnets towards each other. That's the way it is.
Right.
And then some years went by and got married and I stopped singing. Let's put it that way. I didn't know how to choose.
You stopped
because
singing?
Because I used to. Oh, yeah. And I was a singer. I sang in New York and I had a good time with that. But when I got married and he came back from the service during the Vietnam era, he didn't go to Vietnam. But he went to Korea, of all places, and there was nothing going on there, so he didn't have PTSD. But when he came back, you'd think he had PTSD. He used me as a punching bag, okay? I had two children by him. Yeah. And I'm very gutsy. I simply went and applied for jobs where, you know, they told me you needed more schooling. I said, well, send me. You want me, send me. And that's what they did. So... Yeah. You know, that doesn't happen very often, but there would be always someone else, too, that needed a little to satisfy the state because I always worked jobs that I could identify with, like juvenile delinquents, okay? I knew what that was. And then detox centers, come on. I was drinking like a maniac. I didn't tell them that, you know. So I would get job after job. Yeah. So every job I went to, and you made me think about schooling because you're doing it now. So every job that I went to back then, they sent me. They sent me to Princeton, for God's sake. And then also UMD, which I don't even talk about. That's University of Medicine and Dentistry, where they teach you about lab work and they teach you about alcohol and how alcohol affects the body and the brain, that type of thought. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, I wonder what my brain looks like, you know. So, but the point is when you have two children to take care of, and I know you've had a child too, you have to have, it's expensive to live. So you have to have a good job. So I would go from job to job to job. Wherever they paid higher, I would go. And then that's how I got my schooling, too. So now, what is it that you're studying? I'm curious. You said you're going to school now.
Yeah. So I am a licensed master cosmetologist. And right now I'm in school to become a cosmetology instructor because I want to, be able to help other stylists, just reach their goals, get to where they're trying to go, and being a part of that is rewarding to me. I'm learning a lot. I'm learning a lot from being in school for it and being in the classrooms with the students. I get to sit in the back of the class, get to see what they're dealing with, some of their concerns. So I'm sitting in the back with them, and then when I finish my program, I'll be better equipped to understand how to help the industry and how to be able to teach these new coming artists some of what I've learned, and then learn from them. Like I said, I'm constantly learning, so I've been having fun. So I'm excited about that. That's the area right now that I'm working on.
That's good. That's good. Mm-hmm. Now, it says here, as an adult, she went through a failed marriage. So often we do this. Okay. There is narcissistic abuse and alcoholism and depression. Now, I'm an alcoholic, but I'm funny, all right? I don't go around, being nasty to people or anything. Unless they punch me in the nose and I'll punch them back. I mean, that's just self-defense, okay? But seriously, I'm basically a happy-go-lucky person. I don't know why, but I am. But I don't know how, and this happens so often, we don't know how to choose partners. Let's talk a little bit about that, because people need to learn that. It says here that you had a failed marriage also. I had two. Well, actually, the second one wasn't nearly as bad as the first one with Marty, my second husband. He passed away. But the first husband was really bad. Whoa. And let's talk a little bit about your marriage. He was a narcissist. And he was an alcoholic.
So he actually was not those things when I first met him. I had in-law issues. That was one of the main issues that I had in my marriage. And then that grew into other things for us, because we didn't address those issues. We didn't set boundaries. Mm-hmm. We didn't know how to. It was both of our first marriage. And we loved each other. We cared about each other. And we had a beautiful family, but I had in-law issues, and the women, they were tough. And it got to the point towards the end that I lost respect for my husband as well. There were things, of course, that he did that upset me and we already were dealing with, but those were like our main issues, is not understanding boundaries for our marriage and not setting those boundaries up. Now that I'm older, you know what I mean? One thing that I do notice that a lot of women, I can speak as a woman, women who've been through abuse, they choose men that are a lot older. So, I was with someone who was much older than me. And for me, that was normal because I was trying, that's just was normal somehow, some way. But, I'm able to see some of the things now when I speak to other couples. Like, I'm married now, and so I talk to other married couples. I see women. I'll encourage them. I'm like, girl, you got to do this. Girl, you better. I'm like, don't let those things mess you up moving forward. You have to forgive yourself. You have to move forward, and you have to live. And you cannot be, hold yourself up to the cross. Like, even Jesus, got off the cross. It's like, don't let people hold you up to the cross. And just hope for the better, and you learn from your mistakes. And then if you can help others, you do that.
That's good. You have a good, healthy attitude. You see, you're actually well into your healing journey. This is very good. Did you ever go and seek help, from a therapist or whomever?
So when I was younger, I did different counselors, tried them out. A lot of the times I would lose interest because they were like studying me, like, oh my God, you're so mature for your age. I was always mature for my age, right? You know, I had to be. So, you know, I didn't, I guess maybe, and that's when, you know, now that I'm studying more about childhood development and dealing with, you know, at-risk youth and all of that, my understanding is becoming so much more clearer because I'm, like, able to understand myself better. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what. Oh, okay, so now when I see people doing certain things, I'm able to recognize it and offer more in a more compassionate way. I'm able to offer support or, you know, at least understand and maybe give a little piece of advice. But, I don't know, healing is a journey. It's like it's a consistent journey.
Oh, it absolutely is. This isn't something that Bill and I, you know, we're the furthest, I would say, probably on our healing journey than most people that come on NASCA. And then there are others, you know, that are pretty well up there too. But on the other hand, most are not. And still we're not done. You know, we always have an issue here, an issue there, and things in ourselves that we have to work on. Because when you go through trauma, okay, like we've gone through, and then to go into failed marriages too, you know, again, my first husband, the father of our children, he was the worst of the two. And my son found him online, okay? I didn't know where he was or anything. And he called him. And the first words out of his mouth is, "Why'd you call me?" Because you're my father. That's what my son said, right? And he said, "Yeah, and." And, you know, so they had a conversation like that. But before they were done, thank God, the only thing that cleared him a little bit with me, and you speak about forgiveness and things like that, the only thing that cleared him with me is he said, "David, it was not your fault. It was not your sister's fault. It was not your mother's fault. It was my fault." And I thought, wow. Hmm. That he didn't apologize to me, but at least he apologized to my, you know, our son. And then it got back to me, you know, one of those deals, like ring around the rosy there, but that's okay. At least it came back, okay. And, you know, it made me feel a little bit better. I mean, no one's perfect. I'm sure I did things too. But I can't go into detail now of the way he behaved, but it was just outrageous. And, you know, it was just outrageous. And, you know, with children.
I can't wait to hear your story.
Whoa. But with children, you know, like my son especially, he wanted a father. You know, he absolutely wanted a father so badly. With girls, it's a little bit different because you have your mother, and you're supposed to do motherly things. And my mother didn't do anything with me, honey. You'll find out when I tell you my story. But, you know, the point is this. I found out how not to be a parent by the way that I was brought up. Okay. And I'm not saying I'm perfect because I'm not. But at least I didn't make the mistakes that they did. Okay. So you have a child, right? Isn't that what you said?
So I have four children.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I have
that's good.
24-year-old, a 21-year-old, a 17, and a 13. So I have one that's going into high school, and one so they well this is his last year. Oh, yep.
Oh, that's good. That's wonderful. Yeah, I saw a picture of you on the, you know, your Facebook there or whatever, your website. Yeah. And yeah, you are a pretty girl. Yes, you are. You're a pretty lady.
So thank you.
Yeah,
thank
beautiful
you.
Hair, too.
Like what I've been through.
Well, it didn't hurt like your looks own. Any. Let's put it that way. No, it didn't. Oh, now, before we get to that, okay. you're also an author. You wrote a book. It says, and the name of your book is very interesting. It says, My Costa Rican Hummingbird Sings. That's the name of your book.
Yes.
And shall I say, My Costa Rican Hummingbird Sings.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Yes.
You put
yes.
the R.
All right. I do
yes.
a lot of that. I can yes. do that in my singing, too. I howl at wolves,
Ooh,
too, just so I just want you to know that. But anyway, Nancy shares her life story to help guide others in their personal journeys. When did you write your book?
So I wrote my book 2017.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is it on Amazon? It is. Okay.
So right
That's good.
Now,
That's
I
good.
Actually, well, it was on Amazon. I actually took it down because I wanted to try to do some edits, but I have not gotten to it. So soon, hopefully, it'll be back up. You guys keep me in prayer.
I
get it back up.
Okay, I certainly will. I certainly will.
Thanks.
I have a book also, and it got published too quickly, because I saw they had sent me a copy, and I saw mistakes in it. I wrote my book in 28 days, all right? And I've always been a night owl.
Yes.
Always a night owl. So I'm up still at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm sure that I made most of those mistakes.
Yes.
And then they made mistakes,
too.
Okay, you know, they do
that.
Yeah. So,
I wrote it in 3 months. And my mom was diagnosed with cancer, so I literally got to the point where I had to, like, press the gas, you know, and do it. Because if not, like, right now, I took the book down almost a year ago or about a year ago. And I haven't put it back up. And you know what? I mean, you'll drag your feet. Well, that was something that had put pressure on me, and I literally went 3 months. But you said you did it in 1 month? 28
days.
Oh,
I had 314
days. I need
pages.
To do that.
314
pages.
I need
to do that. Write a page
days.
A day. I could do that, girl. You did good.
There, you can. You can do it. You
That's
can
awesome.
Do it. But unfortunately, it's not unfortunate. What do I care? The book got published before I could have the mistakes fixed, because I sent them back a sheet. I say, you know, on page 22, there's two mistakes here. On page 41, there's one or two there. But it doesn't matter. There's only one person who said something nasty.
Just let it out.
Just let it out.
There's always somebody.
Let me tell you something. Mm. When you put yourself out there, you write a book. And my book actually made it to Japan. I don't know how the heck that happened.
Oh,
but it
thank
did.
You, God. Same
thank
grace.
Yeah. I went to check on it. Yeah, this is some time ago now, about a year or two ago. I went to check on it, and I saw all these squiggle marks. I said, what the heck are those marks, those lines? What is that? They go, oops, it's just Japanese. Oh, my God. Now,
oh, my God.
No one asked That's me crazy. Permission, by the way, to get my book out all over the world. All right?
Oh, wow.
But and I wasn't getting any money for it either.
Royalties? What?
I wasn't getting the royalties, no. And that was with Author House. I let people know I don't care because there was a class act suit against them. One guy got a check for 9 cents. 9 cents? Are you crazy? But you see, this is the way I look at it, honey. This is the way I look at it. I got such wonderful reviews because in the 5-star bracket, it's 81%. That's pretty darn high. And then it went down to 4 stars and 3 and 2 and 1. They have like a scale you can look at. So if I only get one bad review, I'm not going to worry about it. You put yourself out there, you're going to get some people that are just plain stupid. Because if you don't like a book, you put it down, you throw it out. You don't try to be nasty to people. But she was nasty.
That's not.
I
mean,
hope
you can make your own book. Oh,
that's right.
I hope she's listening too. That's not nice.
No, it wasn't.
That is.
But
nice.
I got so. That's all right. I got so many good ones that the heck with it. So anyway, here's the point. Okay, you see, we were abused as children, and you're doing what you're doing today, and you're a mother. You have 4 children, and you are someone that people can look up to who have been abused. Okay, absolutely. And you're still going to school because you want to, you know, to be you are a coach and so forth. And so these are things that are very, very important for, you know, for those who have been abused to realize that there is life after abuse.
There's definitely life after abuse. You know, I'm newly married. I have 4 bonus children. I have 2 grandchildren, 1 bonus grandson. So it's like you can move, you could keep on getting up and moving on. You pray, God knows your heart. What is it that, you know, that you're asking God for? Just keep asking Him and keep doing the best you can to be a better person. That's all you could do. You know, you're going to make mistakes. You're not perfect. You're going to have those days when you feel, you know, you feel defeated. You might fight depression in between. You're going to go through good days. You're going to go through bad days. You know, but don't give up. You have to keep pushing through. And then it'll make sense. You'll be like, wow, thank God I waited. Look, I would have missed this event, like this time with the family, or, you know, whenever those good times come up, you have to think like, wow, if I do that, if I, you know, check out, look what I'm missing out on. It's so much bigger. And at this point, I mean, I figure, okay, God, this has to be bigger than me. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know what you want to do with me. You're going to have to do it. If you want me to do it from this point forward, you're going to have to do it. I'm just going to show up, and I'm going to do my part. And that's all I could do, because we put ourselves we hold ourselves to these high standards. We'll be hard on ourselves. We'll feel defeated, and we just live in the now and do the best you can. I don't have, like, energy for negativity or, you know, I just, at this point, I'm like, Lord, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it. He's going to facilitate the connections. He's going to do everything. I'm not fighting. I'm not fighting with people, you know, that's not good. Liking me, or like you said. Yeah, I'm not fighting my way to be loved. I can't.
Mm-hmm. Well, you see, we shouldn't have to work so hard at finding love. You know what I'm saying? If something's meant to be, if someone's meant to love you or whatever, it should come naturally, it should come easy. And I know this in my heart, but that doesn't mean I'm still ready. I would never want to get married again. Ever, ever, ever. Nope. Well, it's kind of hard, I suppose.
I don't know if
to
I would
want to
do it again, so I understand.
No. Good God, no. I'm my own boss. I do what I want. I go where I want to go.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? I have no one I have to answer to, except for me and God. That's it, you know?
Right.
And I kind of like that, all right? But let me ask you something here. It says here, she also founded her own program, Brave Girls Rise Up, which is dedicating to empowering, supporting, and building confidence for young girls. How old are the girls that you work with?
So I was doing my organization, my group, and then right around the time of the pandemic and all of that, I kind of took a step back. And I'm getting back to that place where now I'm doing it, obviously, at the school. Because, you know, we'll have an empowerment moment or sessions and things like that. So I'm still doing the program. The ages that I normally work with are normally the younger ages, like 6, 7, 8, 9. And that's like when I tell a little bit of my story, and I talk about the importance of, you know, not keeping secrets or knowing who to trust with the secrets. I talk more about that sort of thing. And then with teenagers, I normally share some of my story. And if I'm in a group setting where it's survivors, then I go deep in my story. And then that's for like any age, pretty much. I've gone to women's shelters and spoken to the women there. A lot of women that have been through domestic violence, they're like in the hiding out shelters. I've spoken there. And I just, anybody that is connected to some of the stuff that I've been through, I ask, like, what's the topic, like single mothers, or is the topic, you know, like after the divorce, that's when me and my ex started having issues as far as getting, you know, help. I became a real single mother, and then I had other issues because we got separated. But, you know, there's so if I'm talking to women that have been through narcissistic abuse after divorce, yeah, like those type of women, I can speak to. I can speak to the, you know, so pretty much Brave Girls Rise Up really is me. You know, I started at in my ministry at this age, going through life, going through these issues at this age. So I understand the importance of, like you said earlier, early intervention, speaking to these young girls while they're still in the early stages of dealing with that type of level of trauma that, you know, people are not even equipped to handle, especially if they haven't been through it. Nah, but if they haven't been through it and they have the heart for it and they're trained, they'll do great. But people who, it's like if somebody lost a spouse, you're like, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. But if you go up to a child who just finished having being sexually abused, what do you say to that child? And it's like, really, what do you say to that child? What do you say to that woman? What do you say to that person? I'm sorry. Sorry you went through that. Like, went through what? You didn't even know what I went through. So it's just, I think that knowing what the issues are and learning how we can better serve our community, taking from what we've been through to make sure that we do give back and help others, that's where I'm at right now. That's where I get my joy from. So
well, you know,
for
that,
my
that's,
organization,
that's...
it'll be back. For my organization, it'll be back, you know, more in the forefront. But right now, like I said, I was personally also taking some healing time for myself. I think that, you know, and I'm such a giver. When I go in, I go in. And I know that about myself. So sometimes you have to say, look, I need a break for a minute because when I get up again, I'm coming back, you know, as hard as I can. But you know what? It's okay to sit out in a few of the games or in a few of the runs and take care of your mental health. Make sure you're at
well, we
your
all
best
need to do self-care.
When you're giving out.
We have to.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, if people take a break, we all have to do, that's what we call it on the show, we call it self-care. And even when I worked at Greystone Psychiatric, they'd give us one day a month, everyone, okay? I'm not talking about maintenance people, I'm talking about the people who work there, you know, like I was a technician, state certified to work there. But one day a month, we were allowed to take off with pay for self-care. They did that.
Wow,
because,
that sounds good.
Well, that was good, yeah. And see, I would make sure that I wasn't stupid. I made sure that I did it on a Friday, so I'd have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, right? So I'd have 3 days off at work. So, but we all have to, hold on now, I've got my throat, hold on. Excuse me, didn't mean to do that in your ear. But the point is, sometimes we have to take a step back. You know, and just think and chill. You know, just chill.
Yeah.
And you need to do that. But I am so happy that you worked with women in the shelters because people don't realize, especially now, you know, with IPV, as they call it, that's intimate partner violence. And, of course, you'd know that. But, you know, a lot of people don't think about people at home, what's going on inside of the homes right now. And, of course, that goes down into the children, too, you know, with all of that abuse between the parents and or the boyfriend, the mother, right, with the children, whatever.
Right.
And it's such a horrible time now because our world is so filled with stress. And the CDC even knows that 1 in 7 children in 2019, and nearly 1,770 children died. 1,770 children died of abuse or neglect in the USA. Now, so when you say that you go to the shelters and you talk to people, you know, about all the things that, you know, that we cover here at NASCA, a lot of us have come from situations, that's why I had two husbands, right? You know, where there was a lot of abuse going on, you know. Maybe one guy was worse than the other, but the point was it was there, you know, and but the first was awful. You'd think that I would have learned from it. But we don't, because look at our childhoods, okay? Now, maybe you weren't around people that were abusing each other, you know, in a physical way, but they so neglected you by not listening to your voice. You had no voice.
Mm-hmm.
And we children, so mm-hmm. often, you know, we don't have a voice. Or if we do try to say, well, this is what so-and-so did to me, you know, it doesn't matter because they're not going to listen to you anyway. Or they're going to be angry with you, or it'll tear families apart,
oh, yeah.
or all these things. Or maybe you'll put yourself in harm's way because you did, you know, tell. And I'm not going to go into that now. You'll hear it another time. But, you know, I always mm-hmm. still tell people, you know, mm-hmm. teach your children appropriately. You know, we teach them how to cross the street, right, look left, right, all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We even teach them about stranger danger. But we don't teach them mm-hmm. about pedophiles, right?
Right.
So
you
want
to protect your child. A lot of people, they don't know how to talk to their kids about that. They don't know how to present it. And then they don't want to bring light to something. They want to let their child enjoy childhood, which they should. But, you know, the truth is there are sick people out there, and we have to find ways to educate our parents on how to talk to their children about this topic. Their children need that, those resources on how to bring up, how to tell them a nice little story and still teaching them stranger danger and or abuse, you know, dangers, red flags, and who to tell, how to tell.
Well, one thing I can say, and you're going to be, or maybe you're starting now, you're going to be working with NASCA, you know, you're going to be a volunteer. If you look over the website, get it really into your head, because under prevention, intervention, and recovery, which is on the website,
mm-hmm.
you'll see, if you open that up, we have all different kinds of articles about, like David Pittman, I do like some of his work, and he likes it when we mention that it's his work. So David Pittman, he's written some articles that are very good to teach you how to teach your children about the perverts out there. And he suggests that you role play, you know, the husband and wife role play. And because so
yeah.
often, you see, they're so ashamed themselves to even mention the body parts, for God's sake. People have to get
over
that.
Oh, yeah, very embarrassing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my God, I remember covering my face, covering my mouth, just mentioning, you know, telling somebody something. It's like, I just tell them. And then,
mm-hmm.
like you said, private parts, how do you even call them?
Well,
all these,
one
nicknames.
Little girl called her vagina Cookie. She went to school and told the teacher that, I know. I don't know if I don't remember which family member. It might have been her father, brother, uncle. I'm not sure. Who knows? It was someone in the family. A male figure
right.
had, well, he'd eaten their cookie, all right, let's put it that way. And we can't be embarrassed to talk about these things because, you see, kids are so mm-hmm. smart. And people don't realize how smart kids can be. Yes.
Right.
So you'll learn a lot from the website and, like if you say, you know,
like if you say,
God gave us our head and our chin, our face, our shoulders, our breasts, if you're a little girl, your breasts and your belly and your vagina, and without changing the tone of your voice. Okay,
right.
A lot of people do that. And, you know, they because they're embarrassed to say vagina or penis, right?
Right?
So,
yeah.
And kids can pick that up.
Right.
They can pick that up. So, I mean, I'm not going to say more about that, but,
right.
yeah, but mm-hmm. when you, you know, when you are working with NASCA, you're a volunteer, it's a, and for anyone out there listening, who's listening right now, look at the website and go to those red lines, and the lines each have, you know, a topic in them. And the left starts with the programs I slightly mentioned, and you go all the way over to the right. I mentioned all different types of things, but where it says prevention or something to that effect, open it up, and you'll see all different kinds of information for parents so that they can teach their children effectively to keep them safer. And that's prevention. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's why I'm really, really hound on that. When I am allowed to, you know, go places and do, you know, presentations, New Jersey might be under lockdown again soon. That's what I heard the other day. It's already happening in the schools because of the COVID.
From coronavirus, you're talking? Oh, my God.
Yes. So I don't understand this. They said sixth grade. Well, if it's sixth grade, well, what about the rest of the school? It makes no sense to me. None of it makes sense to me. There's too many questions I have. I have a mind that's very active, and I'm always thinking, and why this, why that? It makes no sense. But people are dying, and then there are people who are living that have had it and all this other stuff. So what they do is, you know, with the school system already, they're starting over here in New Jersey to, you know, shut down certain areas. So as long as we have this problem, you had mentioned earlier too, I think you said in 2020, whatever it was, that you were having problems too because of the COVID. And this does, it slows our work down. So what I do, that's another reason why I make those copies, and you'll see areas where you can make copies, and make sure NASCA logo is on top. Make the copies and do as I do, and a lot of other, my friends are doing it, my daughter's doing it, but always ask permission first. The 10 signs of child abuse. You don't want anything too graphic, or you'll scare people away. They'll run. This lady ran from me one time. It's funny. Yeah, she did. And I said, no, you take this home and you read it. I ran after her. What a riot. I'm such a nut. And I said, it's all right, just, you know, go home and read it. Put your glasses on and read them, okay? And she said, all right. I don't know. But, you know, wherever you can go.
It will help
wherever
someone.
You can,
right.
Yeah. You know, it you help someone is exactly right. And she'll never forget me, believe me, because I am so insistent upon people at least getting the information, you know, so that they can be a child's hero. You know, if you make a phone call, like if people don't like to do it in their area because it's urban, and I'm very used to urban areas, I'm in the sticks now and I don't know what to do with myself. But anyway, in the urban areas, you know, it's a good thing to hang up in, like in laundromats, daycare centers. I've actually gone in as a representative of NASCA. I am vice president, but sometimes I say it and sometimes I don't. I didn't even say who I was tonight. I do that, you know. But you know, I'm on every Friday show. People, you know, the people that know me know this anyway, that I'm Carol Levine and I'm vice president of NASCA. But when I go to an organization, even the universities, that's a good place to go if you want to speak when they're open.
Oh, yeah.
When they're open.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, they
I'll
don't
go
get
represent
enough
us.
Schooling. Yeah.
Yep.
They don't get enough schooling. Let me explain something to you. Even the professors listen. Because they get a certain amount of hours to speak about child abuse, and that's it. Even if they're going to become a social worker, that's not good enough.
No, it's not.
No. So, you know, child abuse, again, it has many different forms. I mean, it isn't always sexual. It's physical, mental, emotional, sexual, yes, and neglect. And these organizations, you know, should be taught a little bit more. And with daycare centers, okay, the director, I found this out, the director has had some schooling about it, but she should teach her staff what to look for, bruising, right? Okay, things like that, or even behavioral, you know, behavioral problems. A lot of times when kids are sexually abused, they might act, they'll say inappropriate wording, that words, you know, they wouldn't know. At that age.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. So that's right. Another red flag. But those things, again, you know, should be. In fact, I think they are. And if they aren't, I'll put together something for daycare centers, because if we ever do stay completely open and people have their jobs back or go get jobs or whatever, The daycare centers are very important, and they should have adequate information. Yeah. So you see, I'm trying to give you a little information here as to how you can, you know, if things are closing down, you can put things in the stores, you know, make copies, put things in the stores. I'm asking people out there who are listening, look at our website, and if you want to help a kid.
Share the resource.
There's your resources right there. But ask first. Some will say no, but others will say yes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So we're getting to the end of the show. I think it's, 9:21, I think. Let's talk a little bit more before we have to close the show down. But your depression, okay, and your narcissism and alcoholism and things that your husband's went through, your first husband, that probably made you feel, and I want people to hear this, it probably made you feel even worse about yourself because he probably had nasty things to say to you.
Yeah, for me, it was more he wanted me to suffer for leaving him, for making the choice, and so he stopped helping me. I couldn't call him, he wouldn't speak to me, and he still to this day does not speak to me. So, you know, my children were young, and they were going through an adjustment period. They had things going on and things that I needed to be able to complain to him about, like we always have, when we're together. I would say, hey, this is what's going on. All right, good. This is how you need it. Okay, then we handled it. So we were both very active. And then once we went through our separation, he just backed up completely. The kids could call me, but they're not going to tell you what's the issue or just being mean. I was going through some financial stuff and I needed to feed the kids. I asked for $30. Him laughing, telling me he already paid the child support, so he wasn't going to do extra, just stuff like that. Like, just very mean things just because he was upset. And so that was our biggest clash that we've still deal with, because recently, last summer, one of our kids almost died, and it was just so difficult to communicate. I mean, I kept the information coming, and I was very important, keep them up to date, up to par, but because there's been no relationship, and it's been nasty. I just call it like regular, but it's just still weird. It should be like a comfortable thing, I guess. It should be just normal, right? It should be just, it's about your children. But, for me, I've really been just trying to focus on how to better myself because it's a consistent battle. I'm working on patients, I'm dealing with at-risk youth, I'm dealing with kids who actually really do have some psychological issues and really are dealing with depression and real life stuff. And then I'm around spoiled kids, I'm around entitled kids, I'm around, I'm around a lot of different manipulative kids. I'm around a lot of different things because, I'm seeing a lot of different things. So I've just been trying to ask God to help me to be better with my own flaws, my own weakness, right, to help me to be able to finish the assignment that he has for me that's in this area of ministry with you guys, with survivors of sexual abuse or child abuse. And so, I'm just trying to get ready for what God has for me, to be honest with you. And I'm trying to get in the right position. That's why I'm like, okay, God, you want me to educate. You want me to teach. You want me to assist. You want me to help. But how do I do that if I've never done that? Okay, I'm doing these classes and I'm going through these cycles. But they're actually helping me in the training of whatever it is he's doing through me right now. So, Just trying to be obedient and sensitive to it. I'm sorry.
That's wonderful what you're doing. I mean, again, it's the brave girls rise up, what you're doing, dealing with all these different people in different age brackets, too, you know, and teaching them how to be strong. You're empowering them, and this is so, so, so important. I consider that very important because, you see, we who don't have anyone behind us to teach us, we have to grow ourselves up a lot of times. And we do make a lot of mistakes, and then, you know, a lot of people go through guilt feelings because they made mistakes. I don't do that anymore, but I used to. And, you know, and then I look backwards, and I got rid of the toxic people in my life. That's one thing we do is we get rid of toxic people. This is what we talk about on NASCAR. If there's someone toxic, and look where we are with the holidays, right? You don't want to sit across the table. At least I don't want to sit across the table from someone who's a nut, okay? No, thank you.
Right.
You know? And then people say, well, should I stay home? Well, then you're staying away from the rest of your family. Do you? Are you in contact with the rest of your family? Do you speak to them after all of this?
Well, to be honest with you, I still spoke to everybody. Like, you know, I even with the abuser, I was able to be in the room. One day I gave him some counseling a couple of years back, just advice and tips and support on dealing with a situation through a divorce and all kind of stuff. So that was like, it took a lot of maturity for me to be able to do that because I was trying to, you know, I was just trying not to, like, beat the person up. They already know they messed up, and I've forgiven them. They don't have the power to hurt me. I think my issue with that is when we don't speak up, sometimes this person is doing this to other family members.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Sometimes you're not the only one. You're the one who told. Maybe somebody else is actually really great at keeping that type of secret. And not a great thing. That word was horrible even to use, period, in this topic. But, you know, they're so bounded by the loyalty of keeping a secret for their abuse that they won't tell anyone, you know. And really that comes from a lot of times from a place of respect for the person. If you have high respect, admiration, love for the person, you just like, you know.
Well, you certainly are someone who's gone through quite a bit, and you have a good head on your shoulders, and you have a very optimistic attitude, which is good. And you're empowering people as you, you know, speak to them.
Yeah.
So I consider you, you know, a delight to know, and I'm very happy for you. I'm very proud of you, okay? And I'm very thankful that you're with NASCA. And we'll find something for you to do. Okay, there's always something to do in an organization.
Definitely.
You bet.
Right.
You bet. So, yeah, we've come to the end of our show. In a minute, I'm going to get the Oops, there it is right now. The 90-second cue. So, this was a very good show. You did a fine job. You really did.
Can I say something really quick?
You sure can.
Something really quickly. I feel like it's very important to tell your story every opportunity you get, every chance you can, because there's a reason why you're still here. There's a reason why when I took those pills, I'm still here. It didn't work. But whatever my sister was going through this time last year, she's a twin, and she lost her life through way of suicide tomorrow's going to make a year. And she was also dealing with a lot, and she probably could have been dealing with abuse in the family and nobody telling. She definitely was dealing with depression. She had just went through a divorce. You know, she's a single mom during the pandemic. Finances, jobs were cut, and she was dealing with a lot of that. And then anything else that she already was dealing with besides that, I think that type of pressure really took a toll on her. She was, you know, an antidepressant. Sometimes they make you more zombie-like when you're depressed. A lot of times you feel zombie-ish. And I just wanted to just say you're not alone. There's always somebody there. I'm grateful to be a part of this family. that we'll be able to help other people and that we'll be able to save more lives.
All right. That's right. Exactly. Our show is over. And what you just said was wonderful. All right. And that's exactly right. Okay. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.
And we will be speaking soon. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too. God bless you, honey. Bye-bye
God bless
now.
You. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Another tomorrow. Cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten. After all that you've done. Blog Talk Radio.